Right now, though, let's go to the Middle East. The Syrian opposition has just received a nod from the US government that the US regards it as a legitimate representative of the people. The US is not the only country to do this. In fact, they're late to the party. They joined France, Britain, and Turkey in embracing the Syrian National Council as a genuine opposition to President Bashar al-Assad's regime. Now, the United States Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, was to make the announcement at a Friends of Syria group meeting in Morocco today, but she has a winter bug and she can't attend. It's the first meeting of the nations of the Friends of Syria group since the formation of the new opposition coalition. So more than 100 delegations are expected to attend that conference in Marrakesh, and that's going to start later today. There's also more developments in Egypt, and we'll see if we can try to traverse all of this terrain with Dr. Roger Shanahan, who joins us now, a Middle East expert, a fellow at the Lowy Institute for International Policy. Roger, thank you very much for joining us again. I've got to say, I was a little surprised at Barack Obama's statement today to throw the American lot in with the opposition just hours after it had identified that part of that opposition was a terrorist group.
Yeah, it's a it's a bit of a, in some ways, a high-risk strategy, but you'd think that they're relatively certain that the Assad regime is not likely to survive for too much longer, and that probably would have been the major motivation behind throwing their weight behind the opposition.
I see. You think it's a political calculation. They read the tea leaves and said, Assad's not going to be there, the opposition is, we may as well make our peace with them now.
Yeah, listen, I think as part of that, President Obama previously likes to use the term being on the right side of history, and I think they've held off as long as possible. I think they probably think that there is a workable, semi-workable opposition that they can support, and I think they probably thought this was their last safe moment to be able to be on the right side of history.
How then do they deal with the fact that amongst the opposition groups they've got terrorist organisations, the organisations they themselves have declared to be terrorist organisations and be anti-US? If that starts to form something like a new regime in Syria, what happens?
Listen, this is a horribly messy situation. Well, it always has been, and it's a very subtle difference where you can say we recognise the opposition as the legitimate representatives of the people, however, part of the armed elements of it are a terrorist organisation. So I think the way they've got around that is giving political recognition to the political leadership, but not giving weapons, as far as we know, to the opposition, because I don't think there's any way that you can guarantee that they're going to go into the right hand. So it's a very delicate balancing act, and I think it gives them a way out at the end. If they're, once the end comes, that they're going to have to, in some way, sideline the radical Islamist elements of the opposition. And I think this is the way they're setting the groundwork for that.
Does it change the way the opposition behaves, perhaps, now that they have US support?
Listen, I don't think so. It would have changed their behaviour if they'd been able to get something more concrete out of it rather than just recognition, but it gives them some kind of moral authority, and I think the West in general and the US specifically would be hoping that, having given this recognition, that the political leadership is able to stay united long enough for them to put together a transitional government. I think that's probably the next step in the political phase of the opposition.
Is it risky? I mean, I get that there might be a no-win situation here. The level of uncertainty, and perhaps there's an argument that the West should have come in a little bit stronger earlier and perhaps headed this off at the pass, but I just can't help imagine the various doomsday scenarios here.
Yeah, listen, absolutely. I mean, in practical terms, there's probably no real risk, because you could say further down the track, if the opposition fragments, that, listen, the opposition we were recognising at the time, we thought were the right people, but that's why we're so late to the party, et cetera, et cetera. I think in moral terms, though, I think that's where the difficulty is going to be. If the people that you've got to deal with, if or when the Assad regime falls, are not exactly the type of people that you would like to deal with, if there are human rights abuses which flow as a result, and I think there's probably a fairly good chance of that happening, then how do you then cultivate a relationship with the very people that you've recognised? It's a very difficult situation. And I thought President Obama was correct in holding off recognition. So I can only imagine that he's privy to much more detailed information than any of us are.
So what does it mean for the region then? If we assume that your reading is correct and the US is seeing that the rebels are going to prevail, and that's why he's made the call, we've seen just how much can change in the politics of the region when you have a change of government in the case of Egypt. What happens if Syria goes this way?
Listen, it's that's why I said in terms of the moral aspect, it's a very difficult proposition. And I think, you know, it's a very, it's fraught with danger because, as we said previously, if the group of people who come to power post-Assad allow violence to continue, if they are not able to rein in the less well-controlled elements of the opposition, then the US and other Western countries who have supported the opposition, who have recognised elements of the opposition, therefore have some kind of moral obligation to try and right the situation in Syria, which is what they've been trying to avoid all along. I would have probably kept a much greater distance from the opposition because, as you rightly pointed out, how you deal with the aftermath of the fall of the Assad regime is going to be extremely difficult.
Just before I let you go, Egypt's heading to a referendum on Saturday of a new constitution. A lot of judges are boycotting. We've seen protests. We've seen the military now brought in and armies out the front of the presidential palace to try to restore order. All sorts of presidential decrees. Now, I know Egypt's not necessarily your favourite stomping ground in the Middle East as an expert, but do you have any thoughts on what might happen and what effect that might have across the region?
Probably less so about exactly what is going to happen. I mean, everybody's taking a very standoff attitude to seeing what's happening in Egypt because Egypt's the great exemplar for the rest of the region. If you could make democratic transition work in as large and complex a country as Egypt, then there's hope for the rest of the region. So both the West and external other external powers are hoping that this transition, the referendum, goes smoothly. Mohamed Morsi becomes an effective ruler and allows true democratic activity in the country. So I think in terms of the impact on the rest of the region, I think there's a lot riding on it. If the last thing people would want, particularly with what's going on in Syria, is to see Egypt to revert slowly or more quickly into some kind of autocratic democratic rule, if you know what I mean. You know, the issue with Egypt is a very important one for the region just because of the leadership role it can potentially have.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, we'll no doubt be keeping a close eye on it. Thank you very much, Roger. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, Wally.
Dr. Roger Shanahan, Middle East expert and fellow at the Lowy Institute for International Policy.